Yeah, you're right, Crescent City. Corey Johnson, the 5 o'clock hour coming your way. And boy, we got a wild and woolly one. We're with you for the next hour. Phone lines are wide open at 504-260-0690. Come on, New Orleans, 260-0690. Anywhere you can hear us, it's 888-880-WIST. We got a full slate. Joseph Gow, Dollar Bill. Gow can win this thing. Dollar Bill's campaign's in a panic right now. Not a lot of folks are expected to show up, a 10, 12, 15% voter turnout tops. Gow can win. Speaking of folks in a panic, Edwin Edwards is in a panic because he's talking to that little lady in the red dress who cocked off to Channel 2 in Baton Rouge. And Edwin Edwards said, I talked to Bush Sr., he talked to Bush Jr., I'm getting out in a few weeks. My sentence is going to be commuted. And nothing's done yet. And Edwin Edwards is now fearful that that news, probably back to Bush in D.C., and it could hurt his chances. He's in a panic mode. I never said that. I don't know what they're talking about. Typical Edwin Edwards, can't keep his mouth shut, especially to some woman. This time the woman spoke to Channel 2, Channel 9, the Baton Rouge Morning Advocate. It's rolled down to me, to NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune. It's got Edwin Edwards in a panic, and it's hysterical. From one crook to another. From Dollar Bill to Edwin Edwards to O.J. Simpson. He'll spend at least minimum 7.5 years behind bars, probably 8 to 10 at the least. And it could be as many as 20, 25, 30. Depends on how he acts. 61 years old, safe to say O.J. will not get out of jail, will not see his freedom at the very least into his 70s. And I call that justice payback for the Ron Goldman Nicole Brown Simpson murders. I'm loving it. Hey, speaking of murder, we're going to go live to Lafayette in just a second. Travers Mackle from WDSU, Channel 6 News, joins us on the Mighty 690 live from Lafayette. Another day in court, huh, Travers?
I tell you what, Corey, if you're a prosecutor, they're just loading it up, essentially. You know, one lawyer in the courtroom told me today it seems like the hits just keep on coming against Vince Marinello. Obviously, the jurors have not made a decision yet. This thing hasn't gone to the jury, but we talked yesterday. I had to go run. I think you saw in the news we were chasing down Alan Reese, and I was literally chasing him as I was getting off the phone with you yesterday. He was the gun store owner who testified that Vince bought these NICLAD bullets from him, and those type of bullets were used, investigators say, in the murder. Well, today, Bob Mitchell, known as the real Robert Mitchell, a radio personality in New Orleans,
yep,
testified that he tried to call Vinny all day after they found out it was, in fact, Liz Marinello. Vince finally called him at 10:30 and said, Robert, what's going on? I see people have been trying to get in touch with me. And he goes, look, you know, Vince, there's a problem. Your wife's been shot. And he said that Vince's temperament over the phone, his phone voice, if you will, was very calm, very matter-of-fact. Not the, oh my God, you know, that Mitchell said his voice was very calm, very matter of fact, and the first thing he said is she dead or alive? And then Robert Mitchell said that he asked Vince to come back from Mississippi through Slidell and pick him up, and they'll go to the hospital together. And he said Vince told him, I gotta stay here, I gotta make a couple of phone calls. And so Mitchell said, and I'm quoting here from the stand, that he goes, when I hung up the phone, I don't want to use the term stunned, but it was just a weird conversation.
Interesting. 260-0690 is the phone number. We're visiting with Travers Mackle live in Lafayette at the Vince Marinello murder trial. Yeah. Bob Mitchell's comments, where Vince seemed pretty unaffected, not what you'd expect, and also more evidence. A contractor in Lakeview, best for assassinations? What gun's best?
I mean, Corey, let me tell you, this guy, you know, I think I told you this yesterday, and I referred to, in media, we like to use terms. And I think I called Alan Reese, the prosecution's star witness, today. Alan Reese's testimony, from a prosecution standpoint, pales in comparison to what this man, David Selmo, a 41-year-old former Special Forces Ranger in the Army, who's a contractor working in Lakeview, working for Marinello, told jurors today. First off, let me clear it up. He said, I love this guy over here talking about Marinello in the courtroom, and he said he felt torn because him and Marinello had a discussion, which I'm about to tell you about here, and he didn't know if he should go to police because he liked Vince Marinello so much. But in the days leading up to Mary Elizabeth's murder, David Selmo talked to Vince Marinello, and David Selmo says that Vince Marinello said, I know you have military experience here. If you were going to assassinate or take somebody out, would a 22 be the best way to do that? And Selmo was really, his personality and his moxie with the jury was really good. You know, most people, when they go into that kind of atmosphere, are nervous. They don't know what to do. They don't know what to say. They're stumbling, they're bubbling, and rightfully so. I mean, it's a tense, tense time to go through something like that. This guy, I mean, it looked like he was a professional, you know, of someone who professionally testifies here, and he's not. He's a contractor. He said that Vince asked him that question. Then he said Vince showed him a .38 special handgun and asked him if it could be fitted with a silencer. And Selmo had to tell Vince, hey, Vince, you can't put a silencer on a revolver. It's not made for that. You know, you can't do it. And then he said Vince wanted to test fire the gun. He goes, I want to shoot it in the garage across the street. Obviously, it was Lakeview a year after Katrina. It was a blighted garage and a blighted home. And David Selmo said, you told Vince, you can't shoot it. It's Lakeview. You're going to hear it from six blocks away. People are going to be calling 911 all the time here. And then after having that conversation, everything unfolded, and David Selmo essentially testified that he goes, hey, look, you know, I think, and I'm quoting him here, that I may have held this .38 special in my hand. My prints may be on that gun. I have to call investigators. I don't know what's going on here.
He also noticed a special kind of bullet, the NICLAD bullets, right?
Well, he couldn't identify it as NICLAD.
But just something unique.
Like, something very unique is what he said, right. He couldn't say the bullet that Vince had in the gun when they emptied the gun so David Selmo could look at it was a very unique kind of bullet. He didn't testify that it was NICLAD, but he said it was something very special, and he made the comment to Vince, well, those are some serious bullets, and Vince made a comment back like, you're absolutely right, they are. So
the jury got to see, video surveillance cameras at the Metairie Tower office building. Folks got to look at that. The jurors, I guess, got to see that.
They did. I mean, they saw a lot, but the big two things today for the prosecution were Bob Mitchell and then David Selmo. And like I said, you know, you sit through these trials, Corey, and I mean, a lot of people and a lot of your listeners watch TV, and we all know that when we watch CSI and Law and Order, it's wildly entertaining, but that's not real life. These are actors, you know. A Few Good Men with Tom Cruise and Jack Nicholson, great court scenes, but that's acting. That's not how it is at Tulane and Broad and over at the 24th JDC in Jefferson Parish and even in Lafayette. But this guy today, I mean, you could see that from, you know, in the media we were talking afterwards. It's one of those things where it's like you could see the jury was really focused in on what he was saying. And, I mean, he was really getting his message across. I think he had a quote where he said, you know, people who have certain backgrounds, if somebody asked you about radio, you don't know where they're going with that conversation. Or if somebody asked me about TV, and, you know, you answer them like, oh, yeah, I've worked in TV for this amount of years. This is how it works. He said he just thought Vince was quizzing him on his background because he had learned about his special forces training and was curious about it at first. He didn't know where the line of questions were going, and he made the comment, he goes, I just thought it was the old mobster Vince talking to the special forces guy, Dave, just, you know, shooting the breeze, if you will. And that, he goes, I had no clue that, you know, what he's charged with now, you know, that conversation may have played a role, according to prosecutors, in that.
Hey, Travers, I know you've been in Lafayette all week. I don't know if you had a chance to check out the Times Pick or NOLA.com and James Gill article from yesterday.
You know, I did not. James Gill was up here. We all knew that he was trying to talk to Vince. I glanced at it. And when I say glanced, somebody sent to me on the BlackBerry, but as you know, we can't bring phones in this courtroom.
No,
so.
It's interesting, though, because Gill sat during a recess and talked to Vince, and you think Vince, who's known James Gill for decades, would be going, James, I am nervous, you know, I'm not guilty, and this looks overwhelming evidence against me, it doesn't look like my defense attorneys are doing a good job, whatever. He said he asked Gill about the fairgrounds, how have things been going at the track? I mean,
right.
Vince is on another planet, I think.
I mean, you know, it's one of those things, Corey. Somebody asked me earlier, how's his demeanor in the courtroom? How are his mannerisms? You know, jurors have every right to look at the person charged with the crime, to look at the person standing trial and see how they act, you know? And, I mean, to be honest with you, he's been very sedate. He's been very calm. Coming in and out every day, it's a media circus with TV cameras, essentially, from New Orleans, Baton Rouge, Lafayette, you know, newspaper outlets. I mean, you've seen the video on television where we're chasing him in and out of the courtroom every day, and he's kept his composure. And on the witness stand, when these guys are up there, Vince is sitting there taking notes, paying attention. He's not flailing with his hands or shaking his head profusely. You know, you sit through some of these trials, and it's theatrical, some of the people who are the defendants. You know, they're very animated. He is not. He is basically very calm. Now, maybe he has been coached by his defense team that, hey, stone face, pay attention to what they're saying. I don't know how it works with a legal defense like that, but he hasn't been flailing or shaking his head, and there haven't been any big theatrics. He goes in and out very calmly, and he sits there very calmly the whole day.
What's the schedule for the rest of the week? I understand you guys will have some more stuff going on tomorrow. Sunday off probably, though, right?
Sunday off. What Judge Conragan alluded to is tomorrow morning session, if you will. He knows it's an election day and that this is taking place. Even though it's a state trial, it's taking place at the federal courthouse in Lafayette. Bigger courthouse, easier to accommodate a moved venue like this. So he knows it's a federal holiday, a federal election day tomorrow. I think we're going to go for about 8:30 to about 12:30 or 1, and then he's going to break and say come back Monday. In an ideal world, time frame-wise, I'm sure most people are thinking that possibly the prosecution could rest its case tomorrow, and then Judge Reagan will say, everybody come back Monday, defense will start. And no one knows who the defense is going to call, if anyone, or if Vince Marinello is going to take the stand. We reported this last night during our 10 o'clock newscast. Some of Vince's relatives told me on the way out last night that it's 50-50 if he's going to take the stand or not. And if he does take the stand, his 94-year-old mother's coming up to watch him testify.
Unbelievable. Hey, Travers, what is the take with these relatives? Are they behind their relative of Vince Marinello? Are they... You know, are there friends there, supporters of Vince? Is Vince a man on an island? Is he alone?
He's a man on an island, Corey. I mean, he's had a couple of relatives. They didn't identify what kind of kin they are to him, you know, aunt, uncle, cousin, brother, sister.
Right.
He's had about three or four relatives in the courtroom sporadically. There were none there today, but there were about three there yesterday, one there the day before. We've asked them to talk. Most don't want to say anything. There is no gag order in this case. So therefore, they can all speak if they want to. They just choose not to. Here's something else that's really interesting. This case got a lot of media attention in New Orleans. That's why it had to be moved to a place like Lafayette. Well, the judge didn't sequester the jury, you know, put them in a hotel like you see in the movies, if you will, where they're in a hotel room basically waiting for it to end so they can deliberate.
No newspapers, television, radio.
Right. Well, the judge instructed the jurors, hey, you know, you have a duty here. It's a serious trial. Con Reagan has really done a good job presiding over this case. Well, he told the jurors, don't watch TV, don't read newspapers, and it's probably a good thing, and you hope they're listening to him because both Lafayette stations have been covering this trial as ferociously, if you will, as the New Orleans media. They're there every single day, and they're covering it. I mean, I'm watching the 10 o'clock news most nights in Lafayette, and I'm watching the Vince Marinello story as either their lead story or second story. So if those jurors are sneaking a peek at the TV, they're seeing the same kind of coverage. So,
hey, one last thing, Travers. We understand that Liz Caruso, Liz Marinello, the woman that Vince Marinello murdered,
allegedly.
I do talk, not news. So the one who murdered, I throw allegedly out the window on this one. It's like OJ. Goes to New York and visits with Vince Marinello's brother. Now, there were some reports Vince Marinello's brother said Vince never graduated from high school. That's his brother saying that. Uh-huh. Vince Marinello told me that he played baseball at LSU at least for a year and that he has a Loyola Law degree. His brother's saying he never even went to high school. I mean, I believe his brother, and I think Vince lied about the LSU baseball year, and I think he lied about having a law degree from Loyola. Did the information about what Liz Marinello, Liz Caruso, learned from Vince's brother in New York come to light? Do we know what was said? Because we know Liz Marinello, Liz Caruso, told her therapist about the visit to New York.
They touched on it. One of the people to testify today was Liz Marinello's therapist at 8:45, the first witness they called. She was brief. She was on the stand for about 20 minutes. She just testified that the relationship changed after Liz went up and met with Vince's brother. Now, they didn't go in depth on what he told her. It's just that things changed after that. So maybe he did tell her some stuff about Vince.
And she also said, just on a side note, not so much in a therapeutic note, maybe a friendship type of situation, said, you seem in fear of your life. Maybe you need to get mace or some type of spray to defend yourself from Vince, it seems like. Is that accurate?
That is. So, that is. And you know, this is the last woman to see her alive, essentially. You know, she was leaving her office when she was gunned down in the back parking lot back there. So, you know, it should be interesting. What we're all looking forward to now is they're going to call a woman, Annette Daniels. She's the woman who gave Vince his initial alibi and then recanted her story and is going to testify that Vince, in fact, according to prosecutors, she's going to testify and say that Vince, in fact, you know, didn't get there at 4. He was there at, you know, much later than that.
And it wouldn't be shocking if she said that Vince and her had some type of relationship during this marriage.
Bob Mitchell said today he always, Vince always referred to Annette Daniels as his girlfriend, as his longtime girlfriend. So that they weren't just friends. Bob Mitchell testified today that obviously the David Selmo stuff took center stage, and Bob Mitchell took center stage, but a sidebar in Bob Mitchell's testimony was that the woman who gave Vince the alibi was, in fact, a lover, if you will.
I know the defense gets their chance at it, at Travers, but my God, it's not one, two, three, or four things. It's a few dozen really strong things.
And they're getting their chance now, Corey, you know, they're getting their chance now in cross-examination, and it's not, you know, I was telling somebody earlier, you've seen a lot of trials where the defense will attack prosecution witnesses and try to eat up their story and almost make it seem like they're lying. That's not happening in this case, that they're not doing that. They're not essentially calling these people liars or trying to hit holes in their cases. They're asking them questions, but, you know, it seems that, you know, it's not as if they're going after them and saying, you're lying, that didn't happen.
Hey, Travers, a little birdie told me you're hosting 3 to 6 o'clock on the Mighty 690 on Monday.
That's what I hear.
And I hear you're going to have a bunch of Vince Marinello info and lots of good guests, too.
Let's hope so. I hope so.
Hey, Travers, we'll see you Monday, all right?
Let me grab this, Corey. I'm getting blown up here, and I got a little bit of work to do. So let me get this. Watch us at 6 and 10 tonight. We have a lot more information, too.
We definitely will. That's Travers Mackle from WDSU Channel 6 News. You got to watch it at 6 and 10, and yes, I'll be off on Monday, and Travers Mackle will be filling in. I'm excited about that. Hey, I'm taking Tuesday off, too. Guess who's filling in then? Jay Batt. Yep. 3 hours of Travers Mackle and friends. He'll have lots of good guests. That's on Monday. And 3 hours of Jay Batt on Tuesday, former New Orleans City Councilman. He'll have lots of good guests, too, I promise you. Corey Johnson with you all the way to 6 o'clock. Boy, that Vince Marinello murder trial, it just gets more and more, more and more information, more and more, you know, evidence against Vince Marinello, like you thought otherwise. Vince Marinello is going to be going to jail soon for the rest of his life, and O.J. Simpson is going to jail again, at least for 8 to 10 years, maybe longer. Unbelievable. There is justice in the world. Hey, more justice. Edwin Edwards, in a panic in jail. He thinks he's going to lose his commutation, maybe. That's a beautiful thing. And Dollar Bill could get beat by Joseph Gow tomorrow. Justice, 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 justice. Unbelievable. We're coming back on a Justice Friday, a Fantasy Friday. Corey Johnson with you, New Orleans. Don't move.
Corey Johnson. Expect things to be a little different. The Talk of New Orleans with Corey Johnson on New Orleans Real Talk.
Yeah, you're right, Crescent City. Phone lines are open. 30 minutes to get in the ball game. 5:30 is your time. We go all the way till 6. We do it every weeknight. 3 to 6 o'clock. Corey Johnson with you on the Mighty 690. Do me a favor, would you, New Orleans? Spread the word. Tell your friends. Don't assume they know about us because you know about us. A lot of folks don't even know about AM anymore. Haven't been to the AM side of the dial in 25 years. They don't know about the AM 690, Real Talk, New Orleans Real Talk. So spread the word for us, will you? It's a Fantasy Friday, a Justice Friday, huh? A judge issues an injunction. Deuce and Will Smith can play Sunday in the Dome against Atlanta. I guess that's delayed justice. Edwin Edwards is in a panic over the Lady in the Red Dress interview where he said he talked with Bush Sr., who talked to Bush Jr., and he'll be out of jail in a few weeks. Now he's worried that that story's getting back to D.C. and he won't get his commutation. Justice if Edwin Edwards stays put, huh? Joseph Gow, Dollar Bill, the second congressional district at stake tomorrow. justice if Dollar Bill loses. O.J. Simpson's a big loser. He's going to be in jail for at least 8 to 10, maybe more. That's justice O.J. put away. And Vince Marinello, his murder trial continues in Lafayette, and justice is coming soon. 260-0690, a whole slew of topics. Love to get your take on Deuce and Will Smith being able to play on Sunday. How about Edwin Edwards? Grants this interview to this chick, the lady in the red dress. So typical Edwin Edwards. Doesn't let the real media come in, but he lets this lady come in. I'm sure I can imagine the conversation. Could you pull your blouse down a little? Could you lift up your skirt a little higher? A little higher? Okay, we'll talk now. Okay. You remember, what was it, Hannibal Lecter and, you know, what's her name, Clarice? Let's have a little tit for tat. I'll give you a little murder information. You give me a little personal information. I think you're going to have the same thing, Edwin Edwards. But pull your skirt up a little, pull the blouse down a little. Okay, you got a few more minutes of me talking about myself. Well, Edwin Edwards is cocking off in front of this girl. Won't go to the, you know, I've requested an interview, other talk radio, news, television, newspaper, internet people. He grants this lady an interview. Doesn't think she's going to talk to anyone. She talks to Channel 2 in Baton Rouge. Edwin Edwards talked to the president. He talked to Bush. He's going to get out. Edwin Edwards expecting to get out in a few weeks. Now that's getting back to D.C. and President Bush. And Edwin Edwards is in a panic, denying this, has his attorney releasing a statement, panicking. I think it's hysterical. Probably will cost him his commutation. He'll probably have to stay in jail a couple of more years because throughout Edwin Edwards' life, he couldn't keep his mouth shut. Never could. And he's so brazen and cocky and confident while he sits in jail. This might cost him. I think it's hysterical. In a panic, man. In a panic. 82-year-old Edwin Edwards thinking he's getting out in a few weeks. He might have blown it. That'd be justice on top of justice, huh? Hey, tomorrow, you know, Joseph Gao has a legitimate chance against Bill Jefferson. You think Gao can win? 260-0690. Hey, justice or payback? You happy, O.J.? Getting a minimum. I mean, if everything just works as fluid as possible, he gets, you know, paroled as quickly as possible, you're looking at 7.5 minimum. More like 8, 9, or 10 at least, and it could be more than that. It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood, Mr. Rogers. Jamie joins us on the North Shore of New Orleans.
I was wondering when somebody's going to call a spade about old football players and steroids. When these guys get injured, and they've still got money on the table in these contracts, and they have to take steroids to heal those injuries, and they have to find some kind of substance that masks it so they can try to get through their career and get every dollar that they can earn. When is somebody going to lay it out like it is?
Jamie, you think Deuce and Will Smith, Charles Grant were on steroids, not this diuretic that happens to mask steroids?
Do you think they were not?
I really don't know. I think everybody's giving them a green light like they weren't on it and that's an assumed thing. And it's their word. I don't know. I mean, I really don't know. The story appears to be, and I'd say 99 out of 100 folks, they're not on steroids. They use this StarCaps diuretic, which has some chemical in it that other people who were on steroids would use as a masking agent. So I don't think, Jamie, but hell, you might be right. I mean, you might be right.
I think the bigger issue, and look, I had an unmarried uncle that nobody ever asked any questions about, and you left it there, and everybody was fine with it, and I don't want to persecute anybody. I love Deuce, man. I think he's a great guy. He's an icon, and I think the pressure is on these guys to do whatever they have to do to keep not only that competitive edge, but to keep their careers going, man. And there is no incentive for these old players who are destroyed and crippled to do anything other than that. And that's the real crime, is that this system with the NFL is set up to completely abuse these players until they are absolute basket cases when it's over with. And there might be people listening who will say, hey, give me millions of dollars. I'll give you $1 million. Let me beat you with a baseball bat for a week straight. You'll be giving it back really fast.
You know how long this has been going on, Jamie? You know how long?
Steroids have been around. Sure.
And I mean, probably, I guess they've been around since the 50s or 60s. But I'm watching, you know, North Dallas 40, and Mac Davis references it to Nick Nolte. I'm watching the original Longest Yard, and the caretaker guy tells Burt Reynolds, you know, I can get you red ones, I can get you blue, I can get you steroids, I can get you. I'm like, damn. I look on the cable thing, it's like 1974, The Longest Yard, you know? I'm like, this stuff's been going on a long, long time. Then I'm thinking about the Lyle Alzados and, you know, the Pittsburgh Steelers of the 70s and all that. Mike Webster, Bailey Can Walk, all that kind of stuff.
If you
dying
Earl
homeless,
Campbell,
you know,
watch,
wow.
Watch Earl Campbell walk down the street. It'll make you hurt, man.
Oh, look at Hokie Gaijon walk. And I don't think Hokie was on steroids. I mean, I don't know. I doubt it. I mean, I don't know what the atmosphere was like back then. I've never, ever asked him about that. And I know Hokie to be a good guy, but I don't know if that means he was on him or not. But Hokie was a fullback taking lots of hits and putting lots of hits on people. And that guy barely can walk, man. I used to do this Saturday show with Hokie Gaijon, and he walks around as bad as any athlete I've seen, just hobbled, man. Reminds me of old, who was the old Green Bay linebacker? Nitschke? Used to come in to, Ray Nitschke used to come into Tony Angelo's when the Super Bowls were in New Orleans. That guy was hobbling around.
Like a slow train wreck. I'd like to take the stink off of these old players. And anybody that wants to pass judgment on them, ask them this. If your children were looking at you saying, Daddy, are you going to be able to pay the bills? Are you going to be able to go to work? And you're hurt. And you got to do something to take care of your family and your livelihood. And there's something right there on the table. It's a devil's bargain. But point one person out who wouldn't do it, who would just walk away and say, kids, I'm going to go try to sell cars for a while. Take the stink out of it. Let it stop.
I'll tell you one that did, that didn't. He's a tough guy. He's a competitor. Sometimes he's brutal, but I don't think Will Clark ever did him. He was the natural, and I think the steroids that people did do kind of made him obsolete, you know?
I think there are a lot of rare individuals out there that have done some exceptional things, but as a group of people, I think they do what they have to do to survive in it. Now, you know, talking about the homeless trying to stay warm? No. These are millionaires. And they have access to things that the rest of us don't. I'd just like to see a little bit of emphasis put on the NFL and a little bit of light taken off these players. They've made some decisions and they're having to live with them. The league's not doing much to take the stink off of it. They're playing the game as much as the players are.
Hey, Jamie, thanks so much for the call from the North Shore. Have a great weekend, brother. Tim joins us out at the lakefront in New Orleans.
How you doing, Corey?
Hey, Tim.
Pretty good. I'm out here outside right now looking at the moon and see Jupiter and Venus land down from the moon.
Yeah, they say you can see that pretty clearly right now, man. The lakefront's beautiful, man.
About the last 6 days, it's been visible.
It's got to be a little nippy out there, brother, with the wind.
It's nice. Come on now. This is New Orleans in early December, right?
Yeah, brother, but it's a cool night. It's got to be 40s out there with that wind chill, huh?
Yeah, but I can go back inside.
There you go. Crank the heater up, brother.
Look, I just wanted to make a comment on the second congressional race.
Yep, cow or dollar bill.
Well, I think a lot of blacks will vote for Jefferson, but it's not for the reason a lot of people think. I think it's because they want to keep the seat in minority hands, because that was what it was designed to be.
Didn't Gao a minority? He's Vietnamese.
Yes, I agree, but when you're talking about minority in New Orleans, you're not talking about Vietnamese. You're talking about black or African-American.
No, that's just sad, though. Hey, honest guy that can really do some change, probably make my life better, I'm going to strictly go by make sure a black guy stays in power. That's funny.
I can see it both ways, but dollar bill's probably going to, you know, get in. Well, he's indicted.
No, it's got to suck being black or a woman or Vietnamese or whatever. I mean, and it's got to be easier for me being white, because I'd never vote for the white guy over the black guy, the Vietnamese guy, the girl, if the girl, Vietnamese, black guy were better. And it never, because of color, never.
Well, we got to overcome that, see?
No, but it sucks that. But I was never had dogs sicked on me or my father or my grandfather and fire hoses, so I don't know what it's
That's exactly right. I don't know,
you know, that would make me vote or make me think differently. But I'm just saying, regardless of the history, it's got to suck that you have to think like that.
Well, it's got to stop sometime in our history. For us to move forward, it's going to have to stop. But all I'm saying is this, is that he's going to be indicted, Jefferson. Oh, he is indicted. He's going to trial. Simple. If he's convicted, he's going to jail. And so
he's going to jail.
And so there'll be other people to replace him.
Yep.
And there'll be five or six black or African Americans.
No. It'll be filled by a black. You know, that's a good point. I guess we vote for Bill. Bill gets in, he goes to jail. There'll be an election. There'll be another brother put in. We vote Gow in. Gow's in.
Yeah. See, it'd still be in black hands.
No. I got you, Tim. That's a hell of a good point.
That's all I'm saying. I'm not trying to stir a controversy.
No, I know you're not. You're not being racial or anything. You're talking demographics and
facts.
That's
all it is. And I can understand both aspects of it.
I think you've got a good open mind on stuff, Tim.
Well, I mean, I like the best candidate.
Yeah, I hear you.
I have, but I mean, I'm guilty as other people have been of voting for preferences over the years. But it's what you are, you know. It's what you raised, and you just have to change as you go along.
Tim, thanks, brother.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks for the call from the Lakefront, 260-0690 is the phone number. Hey, real quick, I want to tell you about Zephyr Homes. I don't care if you're on the lakefront, North Shore, home of Thibodeau, Greater New Orleans, Mississippi Gulf Coast, Baton Rouge. Zephyr Homes is building homes all over and renovations starting at $44.50 a square foot. And those renovations are just like their brand new builds. Granite, tile, stainless steel, solid wood cabinets. Their new builds, 10-foot ceilings, crown molding. They do it right. It's a quality build, built to Miami-Dade 150-mile-an-hour hurricane code. Quality build at Zephyr Home. They do it in as little as 90 days, too. Is that unbelievable? Hey, Zephyr Homes, here's the plans. Let's do it. Okay, we can start on Monday. Boom, 90 days later, here are your keys. You're moving in your brand new Zephyr Home. They literally do bridge the gap between road home and your home at Zephyr Homes. Call them right now, 267-HOME. Brad's waiting for your call. Frank's waiting for your call. A couple of New Orleans natives that run the whole shoot match. Thousands of new builds and renovations under their belt at Zephyr Homes. You want to know why? Because they do it better. High-quality build quickly. They just sick the dogs on it. It's like throwing a sugar cube in an ant pile. They attack that quality build. They get it done in as little as 90 days. Now, here's something beautiful about Zephyr Homes. They have an in-house mortgage approval system that's helping that marginal buyer, that guy with bad credit, no credit, poor credit. Zephyr Homes in-house mortgage approval system, getting folks approved, getting folks in a new Zephyr Home in 90 days where other financial institutions, mortgage company banks, they're telling them no. Zephyr Homes telling you yes. If other folks have said no to you, turning you down, you're stuck in the trailer, stuck at the in-laws, stuck between road home and your home, call Zephyr Homes right now, 267-HOME. They'll get you in that brand new build in 90 days. Quit waiting. Oh, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it the next day. 267-HOME. 267-HOME. That's Zephyr Homes. George joins us in New Orleans East. Jorge.
Hey, what's going on, Corey?
Hey, George, what's happening in the East?
Hey, man, it's smooth sailing, baby. I had a question I wanted to ask you. Being a big fan of your father's growing up, watching the editorials, of course, and I was wondering if he still maintained those editorials and if that would be something that down the road you think could be published, because I think it'd be pretty interesting to be able to go back and read some of those things.
No, I've got at my house, I got the 1966 book and I got the 1993 book, and at my parents, I've got every one from 1962 all the way to 1999. They're in a book, binded from every year. He did this for, you know, 39 years or whatever. But Loyola University Library has every single editorial, and I'm pretty sure that some lady painstakingly has gone through 38, 39 years of editorials and is categorize them by people, by category, sports or politics, New Orleans, national, you know, anything that's going on, people that have died, you know, whatever. Just Edwin Edwards, 40 editorials. Mark Morial, 15 editorials. You know, Saints, 80 editorials, whatever it might be. She's got it chronicalized, whatever, has it put in a form where you can get to it, you know. Online, so on the computer. George, I think you can get to all of those. And they're pretty interesting, man. I mean, the more I read them, the more diverse I realize my dad was, from could talk sports, he could talk national politics, world politics, went to China, you know, went to Beirut, went to Egypt, went to Greece, I mean, been all over the world, and I think it's pretty interesting stuff.
You know, the maybe something down the road to think about, maybe having somebody take the, you know, excerpts and things like that, maybe pen them, publish them. I mean, I think that would be a market to that.
Yeah, I know my mom's thinking about taking some letters, and sometimes my dad would speak at a funeral or a wedding or an award ceremony or introduce someone, be the speaker, and my mom has a lot of the stuff he wrote and wants to put it in a book. So maybe, you know, that might come out. What I'm bummed out about, George, I don't have any regrets really in life. You know, maybe my uncle died. I was in the hospital one night. He's on morphine and, you know, not really with it. I left the hospital. He died the next day. My dad was like, yeah, Uncle John was asking about you last night. Why'd you leave? And I'm like, damn, I didn't know he knew I was there. You know, so I have, like, that kind of regret. But one regret kind of, it has nothing to do with me. It's beyond my control. I don't know if it's a regret. My dad was writing a book. He wrote about a chapter and a half kind of about his life in New Orleans, all these New Orleans characters.
Right.
And I think New Orleanians would have loved it. You know, I growing up in mid-city, poor kid, dad dying in a fire, having the snowball stand, World War II, they're
right.
Rationing sugar. His brother was a cop. He'd go to the dock, get a 50-pound bag of sugar. They'd make the snowballs. Everybody wanted to know how they were so sweet. He grew up at the home plate inn, the PA announcer, catching ball for minor league pitchers warming up, selling popcorn and programs. Father died in a fire. Uncle made him go to Jesuit. He wanted to go to Clark High School because they had a great band. Went to Loyola, went to Europe on a boat, worked on a ship to get to Europe, stayed there, rode around on a scooter, bought a watch over there, still has it on his arm today. I mean, Clem and the home plate inn, all these New Orleans characters, news stories, the Mark Essex, you know, the folks jumping from the beauty salon fire at the Ralt Center. I mean, I can go on and on and on. The trip to China, you know, man, too much stuff.
Wouldn't that be great, though? And again, I mean, something like that. You know, your father was, you know, he was New Orleans.
Well, that's what sucks about Parkinson's. It stifles that, you know. It makes it where he can't do that anymore. And he's alive, and I'm glad, and I'm thankful, but I'm bummed that this disease has taken another chapter of his life away, you know, literally and figuratively. He's going to write this book.
Well, I think maybe if you really think it out on his editorials, and maybe I think that would be something that a lot of people would be interested in, because, you know, he was New Orleans. And, I mean, I can vividly remember him saying, and that is good, or something like that.
He would say good evening. Yeah, obviously.
Right.
And that is good. No, you're right. You know, George, I'll tell you this, and I rarely talk about my dad on the air, cock off about him ever, but he not only was New Orleans, he was good New Orleans.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
he was what was good. He was what we could be. He was the potential of a poor kid who grew up in mid-city that was a you know, Nieman Fellow at Harvard, who got a free semester at Harvard because of his smarts and could take any classes and got taught by Henry Kissinger and Zbigniew Zabrinsky, you know, Carter's, you know, advisor.
You,
I mean, you know.
See, I'm losing you.
No, just fortunate, brother, you know. And the tree was planted on a pyramid-type hill, and the acorn rolled way, way down that hill. But, no, I'm lucky. You know, I'm lucky. And, no, that was a great thing about my dad, and that's why I do have such high expectations about New Orleans, because there's a lot of New Orleanians, just like my dad, that are proud people, that busted their tail, that everything great about the city. They're world-class people, and they know New Orleans can be a world-class city. And it sickens them when Edwin Edwards doesn't use his potential and runs the state into the ground, or a Mark Morial doesn't use his potential and sets up friends and family, and Dollar Bill Jefferson doesn't use his potential and sells out his own people. It disgusts him because, and it disgusts me, Because we could be not a the crown city of the South, a great American city. We're an international city. We should be a world-class city. We have world-class attributes, and we have a slow, dim, non-motivated, dense society that doesn't strive for better, that's content with the little bit we have, that doesn't see what is rightfully ours and goes and gets it. We have a separation of race and class that's painful in this city. We have parishes that never want to get together. Jefferson against Orleans, St. Tammany against the South Shore. We lack regionalization. We lack a coming together that other cities know they have to do to survive. We survive on the river, the tourism, our history, the oil and gas, and we don't maximize anything. And it's sad. God's got to be looking at us as a bunch of human sellouts that don't do enough. And the rest of the country is laughing at us. And we don't care. That's the sad part, you know? We don't care that our streets are crappy. We'll just drive around the potholes. We don't care that our public schools are bad. We'll try to get the money and go to private or weasel our way in, Lusher or Ben Franklin. We don't care that there's high crime. We'll move to a gated community or carry a gun. We don't care. And the world sees the trash, the filth, the dirty city, the bad, out-of-date interstate system, the horrible airport, the crime, the streets, the bad public schools, and they laugh at New Orleans, a great place to visit, wouldn't want to live there. And they laugh at us, and we don't care. That's been New Orleans' mantra. The hell with what anyone else thinks. The hell with anything else beyond the levee. There's a whole world beyond the levee, and this is a competitive world where we can't survive by ourselves. We need people. We need money from outside the levees of New Orleans, and we need to care. But there's a painful ignorance in this town that it's been brainwashed in us with bad politicians that don't do their job, and we don't have any expectations of them. And we like second, third rate. We like coming in second, third, fourth place. We like getting beat by inferior competition. We like, you know, sitting in the gutter. We like the Edwin Edwards, the Cleo Fields, the Bill Jeffersons of the world, crooks. And we like the non-performer like a John Alario, where we keep voting him in on the West Bank, the sad, sorry West Bank. Looks like 1956 in a lot of his district. Bad public schools, crime on the rise each and every year, bad streets, no economic growth, very little economic potential, and you vote this guy in since 1972. Never forget Buddy Romer, 87, wanting to reform the state. Alario, Sherman, Copeland, working behind the scenes when Edwin Edwards wasn't even governor to sabotage it all. They have a goal, the Bill Jeffersons, the Edwin Edwards, the Cleo Fields, the Sherman Copelands, the John Alarios. They don't want change. They want to keep New Orleans exactly like it is. They want to keep New Orleans and the state exactly like it is because they're living off of it, not having to put in an honest day's work and getting paid like they did 2 or 3 days of work. And they're doing it on your, you know, back, out of your wallet. And we just accept that. I don't. I'll always bitch and complain about it. You'll always hear we mouthing off against the losers. I fight for what's right. I fight for what's good. And I'm against the evil, the bad, the scumbags. Tomorrow's a big, big day. It's the big scumbag. I mean, come on. Dutch Morial nicknamed him Dollar Bill in the late 70s. Back then he was Dollar Bill, you know? Joseph Gao has a big, big chance. I think Gao's going to win. I think he's going to pull a Muhammad Ali and shock the world. I'm pretty. I'm a bad man. Joseph Gao is a bad man, and the real bad guy, Bill Jefferson, I think he's going down tomorrow. I think Edwin Edwards has been cocking off in prison. It's going to cost him his commutation. O.J. Simpson got his justice. Vince Marinello's next. Hey, man, it's a great Fantasy Friday, New Orleans.
Corey Johnson.
Today's talk brought to you by Subway Restaurants. The perfect gift this holiday season, a Subway gift card. With lots of mouthwatering $5 footlongs on the everyday value menu, the Subway card is a great way to satisfy everyone's hunger and wallet. Subway, eat fresh.
Hey, New Orleans, thanks for joining us. Thanks to Gordy Rush. for joining us from Baton Rouge to fill us in on the LSU football program. Looks like they're getting a new defensive coordinator. Boy, a big, big Southern sports weekend tomorrow night at the arena. NBA, Hornets hosting Memphis. A couple of Southern teams going at it from the Southwest Division. And then on Sunday at the Dome, noon kickoff, Saints hosting the Falcons. NFL action, couple of Southern teams going at it at the Dome. That's good stuff. Hey, I want to thank Travers Mackle for joining us each and every day, all week long, live from Lafayette and the Vince Marinello trial. O.J. Simpson getting a minimum of 7.5 years behind bars. Don't forget to vote for Joseph Gow tomorrow. Travers Mackle filling in for me Monday. Jay Batt on Tuesday. I'll see you Wednesday, New Orleans.